Hi, this is Polly. It is Thursday, August 7th, and we are on our anxiety Q&A call. This is Joshua.
Hi, everyone.
Everybody needs to know that you just star 2 and your hand will go up, and we will start answering your questions. If you're too shy or don't have anything to say, don't worry about it. I have a whole slew of email questions that we'll be answering. So now I'm going to try to find out where my control panel is.
I think we need to put everyone on mute.
I think so. And select the control panel. I want this one. Sorry, you guys. They've changed my system, and I'm very confused. And I found instructions. Oh, my goodness. Where is the... maybe I'm going to have to restart this recording.
No, hold on. Yeah.
Oh, there it is. They've just changed. Okay, here we are. Here we are. I see it. Okay. So if anybody has a question, you can put your hand up. Josh muted everybody because I think we had a little dog in the background. So just go ahead and raise your hand and we'll get to you. Josh, did you have anything to say before we got started?
No, I've had a really good week. Life is good. I've been practicing when I preach. I just went on a bike ride with my wife, and so I'm still sweaty, but ready to go.
I actually had to do some practicing myself, too, because as people have known, that been hearing that my stressors have been really, really high. And there's additional ones that have popped in, and some pretty significant. So I've had some issues, and I've had to go back to the beginning. Not even decaf coffee for me, the whole thing. And so last Sunday, my family asked if I'd like to go out to a movie, and they were going to bring extra people. So I got in the car, and we drove and picked up somebody else, and we drove about an hour to the show. We sat in the show, which didn't turn out to be that great. And then we went out for lunch and stuffed ourselves, which is something I could never do before. They insisted that I have dessert because it was my birthday, and I would have just, ordered broth or something and sat there if I could handle getting through. But I want you to know that I had fun. All the things that I couldn't do, I couldn't ride in a car with somebody. There's no way I would have sat in a movie with somebody. I ate crazy amounts of buttered popcorn and then this huge meal out. And then we had, when we were driving all this time, forward, backwards, I couldn't let all these people down. And I was great. So it was a good feeling. And I just remember thinking, this is what it's like to feel normal. This is what it's like to have fun and enjoy people. So.
Yeah, and you use the term going back to the beginning. And I think a lot of people would hear that and think you're going back to the beginning of however bad it used to be. And what you really mean is I'm going back to kind of the toolkit that I know that works for me.
Right.
I don't think
right.
I cheat at all. Yeah, so that's a huge difference. I mean, there were times when if that's all going back to the beginning looked like, that would have been wonderful. But everyone, it's the most normal thing in the world when you're going through this recovery to feel as though when you have a setback, you are, quote, going back to the very beginning. It feels like you're going to go all the way back to square one. And I'm just here to share with people that that's not the case. You might have to go do some more work, dig back through your toolkit, pull things out. But, in my mom's case, I'm aware of what the stressors are. And they're significant, and this would be a setback for anybody with anxiety or not. So being able to still go out, enjoy your life, eat, sleep, these are huge accomplishments. So I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, well, when I said go back to the beginning, I want people to know that I just mean that I kind of scanned through the list of things that I know can trigger off anxiety. So I have to get back to my pure status, and then I can start adding in my extra little things. Like I said, I couldn't even have decaf coffee. I just couldn't even have it because there's 3% caffeine in there, and I was just getting jittery and everything. And so today I had a cup of decaf coffee because now I have balanced myself back together, and I'm fine. I don't mean I had to go back to the beginning of where I was suffering. I just go back to the beginning of the book that we have. Just you can scan right down the list of areas that we rebalance. We teach you to rebalance. So I look, it just is kind of a reminder, oh, I better do this, or I better do that, or I have to get more strict with myself for just a little while. I have to do some of these things. And maybe I have to take a little medication to take the edge off if it really gets going and I can't sleep. There was one night when we got particularly distressing news, and I couldn't sleep. I slept 4 hours, I think, in the night. So when you don't sleep, then you can't handle stress as well. And so I just had to go back and just take a look. Okay, here's where I am. I know this is pretty bad. I know that I have to deal with this. And so I'm going to give my body and my mind the best that I can give it, and then pick up from there. And it just makes going through those stressors so much easier when you do that. And, you know, you put one foot in front of the other, and pretty soon you're out. And it's not that the problem is going to go away, problems in this case, but it makes me very functional and clear-headed and be capable of taking the steps that need to be taken. So, okay, are we ready for our questions?
Absolutely.
Okay. I was hoping that there was going to be someone from the UK calling in. I think I may have sent the letter too late. So I'm going to just wait a little while and see if they get on the line. I see.
We can answer some questions ahead of time. And
if anybody, yeah, we'll answer some questions. If they get on, if not, then I'll go to the email and answer, and they can listen to it on the replay. But I wanted to do a back and forth with them, but I may not have. We have a big time gap difference, so
yeah.
That may have happened, and so we may not actually get on at the right time. Okay.
I call with people all over the world and trying to get time zones figured out, you know, for like Saudi Arabia, and it's always a challenge. I don't know why I struggle with that, but I'm GMT minus 6 or 7. It depends on, time zones are challenging.
I know, and then we add our Pacific and Eastern and Mountain and all those other times, and it gets really confusing.
Yep.
But that's
yep.
not what these people are here to listen to, so let's keep
Absolutely.
Going. I have acute anxiety for over 13 years. When I have attacks, my brain has like electric shocks, my face goes numb and tongue. I have chest pain and feel sick to my stomach, but this my concern now for the past 6 months. My left arm have been hurting all the time, and I feel tingling. I'd like to know if it's anxiety or could it be something else. Please help me. I'm so worried. I called the advice nurse. She said it is anxiety. Does this happen to anybody else? I have
some particular opinions
on that one because my husband was a chiropractor for many, many years. And so that question has some different parts to it. Josh, you want to talk about the anxiety part, and then I'll talk about the chiropractic part, because it's, I think the advice nurse is not properly dividing that question up.
Yeah, the question's going to come in, you know, is this all or nothing? Is this anxiety or is it not? And we have to remember that anxiety, one, is an amazing chameleon. It can find all kinds of symptoms. There's very few symptoms that cannot be connected to anxiety. It can mimic just about everything. It really likes things like what's being described here, numbness, tingling, I use the general term peripheral neuropathy. The outer nerves are struggling. This makes perfect sense with what's happening with the anxiety response. These are incredibly normal. Blood flow is being taken away from anywhere where it's not needed and being put into the large muscles. And so it's going to steal blood from surface skin And because humans like to get hurt in their face and hands and feet when we fight, that's where it's going to come from mostly. So you're most likely to get, that kind of white face look. And then, a stronger reaction, you're going to actually have the nerves kind of being robbed of oxygen. You're going to get that and other chemistry that helps them work. And you're going to get that sensation of numbness, tingling. That's really common. Left side pain, of course, we always have to be a little concerned when we get the sense of left side pain, left side chest, left arm. Most of our hearts, about 99% of the population, our hearts are on the left side. So when we hear that, we want to say, hey, make sure you check that out. And that's pretty typical at the beginning of my process, is saying, if there's something that concerns you, get a workup. But, 5 minutes on an EKG will absolutely tell you, or a simple blood test will tell you if anything is happening. If there's any actual heart tissue dying, they can pick that up in a blood test immediately. So, if these people have those significant concerns, it's common. Most people would go through some level of generalized medical care in the beginning just to make sure that we're not dealing with something, quote-unquote real. I think anxiety is very real. And then I think my mom's going to get into the musculoskeletal aspect. This also could be, we just have to remember that anxiety is going to mess with our overall chemistry a lot. And in some regards, that's what that's kind of where the breakthrough program comes from, is the realization that anxiety over time really, really messes with the body chemistry. And the breakthrough program was designed in large part to put that back. Even people who don't struggle with anxiety, it's just generalized stress, over exercising, things like that. We see a very similar depletion of nutrients, and you can get all kinds of fun stuff that Lamont's going to describe. Your turn.
Yeah. Well, normally in a practice where, although he was an internal specialist and was very medically oriented, my husband saw chiropractic patients every day. And he did not approach it as slam, bam, push it in. If it sticks up, push it down. He felt that if you could be out of place, you could have birth defects, you could have all kinds of things in your body that are going on, but you won't necessarily be in pain until the muscle spasms. So by the time a patient is coming in, unless they have learned and know exactly what to look for, the pre-sensations before they're going to get in trouble, when they walk in the door, they have usually pretty severe muscle spasms, and that either is the cause or the effect, we're not sure which, or it could be either or, of causing a misalignment or misadjustment of certain parts of the spine. Of course, there's parts all over the body, your wrists, we see that, feet, ankles, fingers, all kinds of things can get misaligned. But we tend to get muscle spasms because we're missing nutrients that keep those muscles relaxed. And then when they contract, the pain comes in from this muscle that won't relax, plus oftentimes it swells, and it also sometimes traps the nerves. So there's what we would see a lot of sciatic patients where a third of the population has a nerve, the sciatic nerve runs through the piriformis muscle in the buttocks. And it's called the piriformis because this nerve oftentimes runs through it. So you'll hear people say, oh, my sciatic nerve is just killing me. I'm in so much pain. And what's really happening is that the muscle has spasmed around that nerve and the nerve is swelling, and sometimes it'll get as big as my husband's thumb. It would be because of this squeezing of this muscle down, so they're in acute pain oftentimes. Adjusting that is helpful because it sort of can cause the muscle spasm. Being out can cause the muscle spasm, but it also can cause the muscle spasm, can pull things out of place. So in her case, she's got this feeling, in her left arm, and this tingling. That is very, very common when there's misalignment in the neck, the cervical area, and there is a pressure or a pinching of the nerve in the neck, which radiates down the arm and into, it depends. It can radiate partway down the arm. It can radiate, it can cause hand pain, wrist pain, neck pain, shoulder pain, and all kinds of things. So Dr. Myers would put these people on the same nutrients that we use that are forced out of the body by the chemistry of anxiety to get that muscle to relax. Sometimes they needed special deep tissue massage, or we had machinery that would force the muscle to relax. He had a piece of equipment that would actually force the muscle to relax long enough so that he could make an adjustment, kind of taking the stress off of that area so that muscle could relax. But basically, an awful lot of muscle spasms are caused by this nutrient depletion. The muscle just cannot relax. Josh, you pretty much know the chemistry routes of that. But so we see a huge number of patients with anxiety that have these muscle spasms. They can have them in their legs, their hands. They can have, I want to call it twitchy leg syndrome.
I think I get it. By the way, if anyone wonders why I know as much as I do about the human body, it's because these were the conversations I've had since I was, 10 years old, growing up around my family. Even though my emphasis ended up being psychology, these are the conversations I was expected to have. I just want to point out that there's going to be a myriad of physical symptoms that arise with anxiety, somewhat directly caused by the anxiety, somewhat caused by kind of a fatigue that my mom's sort of describing over time when nutrients get forced out. And underlying that, though, will be this catastrophic thinking. We tend not to say, oh, I have a muscle spasm. We tend to say, oh, I'm having a heart attack. Whatever we tend to come up with, it tends to be something extreme. And we can actually use that after a while as identifying that it's anxiety. If you have this really irrational response to a pain, a nerve, a tingling sensation, a feeling lightheaded when you stand up, if you tend to gravitate towards, oh, my blood sugar is a little bit low, or, hey, I didn't stretch today, that's, probably the right way to go on that. If it immediately goes to some extreme disease or potentially life-threatening situation, then that's a clue that it's anxiety. And after a while, you get used to that. When your brain goes right there, you're in anxiety mode, and you're probably wrong. It is the damnedest thing. I am always amazed by this. When people are finally having a heart attack, after years of saying, could this be a heart attack, when they actually finally do have a heart attack, they say, this isn't a heart attack. I don't know what this is, but it's not a heart attack. It is so amazing to see the denial that shows up when you're actually really in a problem. It's like anti-anxiety. It's amazing. I was joking a couple calls ago about my son, who is always worried that he's breaking his arms when he's falling down. He's 10 years old, 9 years old. He's been crying, over the last few years every time he falls down. Well, the first, when he finally broke his arm, he comes in and his arm's crooked. I can see it across the room. And I said, did you break your arm? And nope, definitely not broken. Don't know what it is, but it's not broken. And it's like, how do we do that? So I wish anxiety folks like us would kind of take a note of that. And when you find yourself going into denial, that's probably when it's time to go to the emergency room. When it's just your anxiety's ramped up and you've got another sensation and your brain goes to those extremes, that's probably anxiety working. So about all I can do with that.
Yeah. Well, so the end thing was that the advice the nurse gave was that it's just anxiety. And I find that, no, it's not just anxiety. Yes, maybe if they knew what we did, they would relate it back to anxiety. But at this point, this girl needs to go in and get some help. And then she needs to get those muscles relaxed and get the pressure off the nerves. And so by lumping everything into one thing, this girl will probably suffer for years. And the problem with that is then tissues can fibrose. They splint to protect you. They will send minerals into the muscles. They fibrose. And so many years down the road, the issue can be severe and undoable. And I think, though, once you go through the Breakthrough Program and you already know okay, this is what I need to do, and then you have an issue like this tingling in the left arm and this numbness, then you know, oh, well, this is not my anxiety. This isn't typical. This needs to be taken care of. So, but, you know, we'll find that oftentimes we'll find people giving advice or, oh, once they say you have anxiety, they just throw everything in there. So we have to be careful.
Yeah, and, you know, you'll hear me say something to the effect of, you know, people will come to me. So I'm more on the psychological side. So people come to me and say, is this all due to my relationship with my mother? Is this all due to the current boyfriend? You know, whatever. And I will tend to say no. Yes, maybe a part, but let's get the anxiety out of the way first. Much like with these physical symptoms, I don't think people believe that you can actually take the anxiety out of the picture and then go look and see how you feel physically, or then re-examine the way you interact with your daughter, your son, your mother, your coworkers, your friends. We actually can get the anxiety out of the way first, and then it becomes much more obvious where there's sources in your life of either, in my case, more the psychological side, or as my mom's describing, the physical stuff. If the anxiety's dropped by 90%, you're still feeling some physical symptoms, okay, then we, you know, go to the chiropractor, or we look at different approaches to address that. People think that they've got it backwards. They've got to fix their body, their life, their everything, until their anxiety will go away, and that's not what I found at all.
Okay, next question, because I don't see any hands up yet, and I don't see one from the UK, so we'll just do it later. I'll pull that up on the screen, but we have plenty of questions. Hello,
time. You know she's going to call right when we're done. That's how.
Yeah, that's probably what will happen. Oh. We'll stay
right
on.
Right in the end.
Okay. I have a question for everyone here. I often see people posting that they feel like people who do not have anxiety are incapable of understanding what it's like to suffer from it. I can definitely relate to this and something I run into daily. My question is, does anyone here feel like their therapist or psychiatrist, etc., does not understand or get their anxiety? We had that recently, and you were pretty clear. So let's go over that, because this person obviously just didn't listen to that call.
Oh, no. It's a common question. You know, I had an experience recently where, and I think it was the last call I was talking about this, I went out to a glider pilot who happened to be a physician, lifetime physician.
Right.
Yeah, and I thought, okay, this, if anyone can understand, my intuition said he couldn't. That's funny. You know, I can spot people in a movie, or it's weird how good you get after a while of spotting people with anxiety, and the opposite, people who just have never touched that kind of stuff. And I told him that, you know, it might be difficult for me to fly with him today because of anxiety. It was just kind of testing the waters. And he gave me, like, the worst response as far as, oh, that's your problem, basically. And I was like, okay. And then it occurred to me that surviving the medical process, it's really a kind of screening process at some level. Not only do you need to be, you know, smart and diligent, but you need to be able to survive those silly 72-hour internship-type stuff, whatever. They do a good job of probably weeding out people who struggle with anxiety. There's a number of things in our lives where it's unlikely we would find people with anxiety disorders. Probably military stuff, there'd be less than average. And so, especially, you know, most surgeons, general medicine practitioners, I just am not counting on the fact. I mean, they read all the books. And honestly, you know, my bias is that they're so affected by the latest drug research, which is bought and paid for by big pharmacies. Big pharma, the big pharmaceutical companies, that they have no clue how to really interact with their patients, really get to those difficult, quick, subtle differences between one patient and another. And we're learning that, and my mom and I read an email from a friend of ours who's a psychiatrist, just incredibly nuanced differences from person to person as far as different genetics and brain chemistry and how completely different drugs, and some drugs would go very bad even though they present almost identically going to a general practitioner. So, good luck with general practitioners. You're going to find very few. Then moving into psychiatry, you're going to find some more, although they're rare. And they don't absolutely need to relate to you to be good at their job, but they need to ask very, very specific questions. How you know you're at the wrong doctor's office? It feels like they have a bunch of rubber stamps, and you are one of them, and they, you know, ink it up, stamp it on the paper, and that's you. That's your diagnosis, that's your treatment, and you're out the door. The reality of anxiety is much more nuanced than that. When you go to the right place, prepare to spend a long period of time, maybe an hour, hour and a half, listening to these like incredibly detailed questions and painting this very specific picture about what you are exactly. And when I found that, it made a huge difference. The very first try I made with a psychiatrist that took that kind of care was a good one. And so there's a reason. Moving into therapy also, it's more likely. I found a therapist who struggled with anxiety disorder before. They tend to not want to talk about it and relate on it. It's sort of like the therapeutic model is that you don't want it to be about you, the therapist. You want it to be about the client. You really don't want to share. I diverge from that quite a bit. I'm obviously very open about my personal struggle with anxiety and teach from more of a coaching model. It's about what I've learned through my experiences. So, yeah, you would think that, you know, these people we go to for care would be the best at understanding where we're at, but there's no reason to believe that. That's quite likely the opposite. Can we still get good care with people who don't know what it's like to have a panic attack? Sure. I think it's helpful, though, to have people that, at very least, understand how specific we are. We're not some cookie-cutter, you know, one-size-fits-all thing. And if it happens to be that somebody I'm working with has had a panic attack, great. Then we can relate it at a little bit deeper level, but it's not a must for my medical care.
I found it interesting in the letter from the psychiatrist. We've known this woman for a long time, and we've watched her evolve with her thinking and care of patients, because when she first started, she was pretty standard in her care, but she really, really cared about the patient, and she's just kind of gone off into what standard medicine would say is the weeds, but she's done a tremendous amount of research, and she's agrees with a lot of what we do, and actually she's going way more into detail, and I found that, do you remember the sentence in there where she said that the SSRIs were not helping and maybe even and making these particular patients worse. Did you see that? Did you notice
that
sentence
that
in there?
That's
so
out.
She's really moving out and really getting into the genetics of what's going on, the actual nutrients that are being depleted. I just wish that all of you could have a psychiatrist that was that capable. Although, once we go through the Break Free program, there's just kind of a few things that we can ask our doctors for. And Josh, you say that you kind of go in now and just bounce off what you think you should be doing. And I know that you write letters or emails for some patients or clients of yours and say, well, here's where this person is and here's what the protocol should be for this patient. I don't know how much they appreciate that, but
I'm thankful about that.
But the patient starts standing up for themselves. That's what's really interesting, is the patient starts to know the difference and know that maybe that doctor doesn't know what's best for them and starts requesting what they particularly need. No, that drug made me sick. No, I'm not going to do this. This is what I am willing to do.
The important concept is becoming your own best advocate. Unfortunately, we can't count on most medical providers being our best advocate. They have, you know, whatever 20 or 30 patients a day they've got to get through, and they take their best guess. They kind of maybe choose the safe route or the latest, greatest, you know, the thing that the drug rep was in talking to them that week over sandwiches. I wish that weren't the case, but there it is. And so it's tough when you first, you know, start working with the medical field and you have anxiety to feel like you have a right to stand up for yourself and say, no, this is not what's going to work for me. And a lot of the medicines have this kind of 8-week till it even begins to affect you as far as positively, and it definitely you get hit with all the side effects right away. And so there's this idea that you're supposed to just go away and be quiet for that period of time. I don't want to go too much into the medical side, but learning to become your own best advocate. And sometimes I will be that support person for people and say, nope, you know, you should be seeing this by now, and those side effects are not going to go away. That drug, that's, if you can't live with that, you know, and it might be 3 or 4 days after doctor's visit, I'm going to say, you know, it's time to go back in, say that was the wrong direction. Good experiment, moving on. We can check that box, and that's a change that had I gone through my own process with the attitude I have now, instead of being, let's call it 2 years of maybe trying every drug under the sun to find what was right for me, I could have, you know, shut that down in about 2 or 3 weeks. I could have found what worked, what didn't, and that would have, you know, given me 2 really difficult years of my life back.
Oh, it was more like 5. You just,
well, there's,
I don't know,
that
you got it down to 2, but you were
2
pretty.
Is, yeah, that's when I'm just actively
pretty scary
trying
for your parents for that
2 years at least when I'm trying drug after drug after drug. Yeah, there was a really intense period there where I was really working hard, and it's weird that all of a sudden you realize a year's gone by and then another year's gone by, and every day is just a massive struggle.
Well, we've lectured them. Your doctor,
you're on this,
or therapist, yep, may not be your best advocate. And
not always.
So you have to educate yourself. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. There are some that really do care and may not know. I do have people that have turned their entire programs over to the doctors, and they've been thrilled, which is wonderful when you come across somebody like that. And they really get somewhere because then they're on the same page. Okay, let's just go on to another one.
Okay.
I have a therapist. Maybe, I hope this isn't part of it. I have a therapist that I get along with well enough, but most of her advice seems to be of the just do it variety. Oh, which anyone with anxiety is much, much, much easier said than done. I am not entirely sure what to do. Just wondering if this is something anyone else has had to deal with. Yeah, the just do it, immersion therapy, just do it therapy. I worry about the tracks that are laid down. They become deeper and deeper. Josh, I know this is your area, so
yeah,
let's talk about
alley.
That a little bit.
If that by itself was the solution, if you look at the things I've done in my life, whether that was going to the Olympic Training Center to shoot as an athlete, I want to be clear, to shoot as an athlete. So I'm shooting a rifle as an Olympic athlete, locked in at night at the U.S. Olympic Training Center. Hopefully people can relate to what that challenge brings up. Fly out to Colorado Springs, Colorado, and I had a hotel. My dad was staying in a hotel, and I could have stayed in the hotel, but I wanted the whole experience. It was like kind of putting yourself in prison. There's armed guards, you know, up and down the hallways all night long, literally, because terrorists have killed U.S. athletes before, not U.S., but athletes. I know Israeli athletes were killed. And so I've jumped off cliffs. I've looped a paraglider. I've looped pretty much everything I fly in aerobatics. And you could go on and on, whether that's just, you know, going on a trip with people I don't know. I mean, I've hucked myself off the metaphorical cliff so many times that if that was the solution, I would have solved it by now. And what I would say is, yeah, there comes a point where some just do it is helpful, but it's not the whole picture. I don't want to put a percentage on it, but it's different for each person. Everybody's, like I said, going to have this nuanced sort of history, this nuanced sort of personal experience, body, psychological experience. And yes, just do it is a part of it. But when you're in the therapeutic world, you kind of have been indoctrinated into one school of thought, and clearly this therapist has that, you know, we treat anxiety, you know, which is a cognitive behavioral disorder, by a bunch of practice, that's all. And sort of it's the, if you're a hammer, all the world's a nail problem. And I hate that when therapists start saying, you know, I will solve all of my clients' problems with one approach. And that's unfortunately what most therapy does. Is it has one model, one belief system. It's almost like a religion. There's one way to salvation. And that's the way they work. And I try to be exactly the opposite. I sit square in the middle. I'm more than willing to use a variety of therapies, variety of medication approaches and then breakthrough program and all the nutritional side. And I try to sit squarely in the middle of that whole world and offer advice and counsel and be an advocate for my clients right in the middle. So, yeah.
Well, I have a personal experience growing up, which is interesting because every year as a child, you get to, well, back then it was September. I don't know what it is now. The kids start in August.
Right.
But so I would be having this nice summer vacation, and I was much better. And then I started the anxiousness about going back to school, catching the bus at 7 o'clock in the morning, riding for 45 minutes to school, going to school. I had my rules about going to school and that I'd have to rush to the bathroom between every class just on the safe side. And then I was the second set of bus loads going home, so I'd have to wait another hour or whatever for the second bus, and then it's another 45 minutes home. And so this was very uncomfortable for me. And so every September I would have a terrible time. And then day after day after day, I would do it, and every day it would get a little better. And then we'd go on Christmas vacation. And do you know that that 2 weeks, I would start completely over in January. I'd have to go back and be just as upset. And then we'd go to Easter break, and I'd do the same thing, and I would have to start right back up. So I did this for how many years? 12, 13 years of your life you do this? Same thing over and over every season, every year. Same thing. I did it. And yet every time I took a break, I would slide back, and every time we went back to school, I'd have to start over and get myself calmed down enough to handle school. So I... obviously, if it was 12 years of the same thing, that aversion therapy just didn't, it wasn't the solution. And today, I can do things easily without even worrying about something, and maybe not even till the day of the thing. I don't stay up all night and wait. And worry and not eat and all that kind of stuff. But so for me, it didn't work. Okay.
Well, it's a piece of the puzzle, like I was saying. Does it have some effect? You know, I could see the therapist saying, see, look, each day it's getting easier. This is working. This is the one route to salvation. And it's like, well, it's a piece of the puzzle. Yes. I don't know.
If I never had a break, I suppose it would work.
But no, you're not getting at the core of it, obviously.
Right,
it sets
right.
yourself back in place. It's a piece of the puzzle, I will say that. And boy, does it get easier. I mean, if we could go back to you in seventh grade and
have your nutrition,
perfect. An exercise, some mental strategies, maybe some breathing, and who knows, medication. I don't know what your particular package would have looked like and not had those setbacks. You would have had a completely different identity.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to be president of the United States, or a doctor, one or the other. My life would have been very different, and I was certainly intellectually capable of doing all those things. Actually, my dream job would be to be in a think tank and just throw out ideas repeatedly because I just love solving problems. So,
You and I both have that. I don't want to diverge down this rabbit trail too far, but I think you've invented most of the things you see around you. Not literally, but there's many inventions you've thought of but never been able to pursue, and all of a sudden it comes out.
Oh, yeah.
For me, I was working on the head injury thing, and now all the female soccer players, because of the last World Cup, are starting to wear these spongy headband-looking things.
Uh-huh.
It's becoming. And I'm like, hey, I drew those up like 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I love to solve problems, just love it. And the problem with me is that it upsets people around me because I'm not in a think tank, and I start throwing out solutions. They'll ask me something, and I'll start throwing out this, that, and the other, and I overload their systems with too many possibilities because there's not generally one answer. There's many, and if I throw enough out, then I maybe the next day I'll go, oh, wait, that's not going to work because of this, because I can run through them in my head and see that, no, that's not going to come out the way. It was great, but we got to do something. Anyway, my life will be quite different, and I have developed many, many things. I still am waiting for my freeway system and my adjustable cars, but
right.
that I developed when I was like 20 years old. I don't know what's going to happen with that
okay.
one. Okay, let's get to the next question. Due to anxiety and panic attacks, I've been off work for 2 months, but now I have to go back to this in a week. I'm very upset and freaked out about going, and the anxiety has gotten really bad again. I just don't know how I'm going to be able to do this. Any tips on how to cope would be greatly appreciated. In 1 week. Okay, Josh.
Get on the breakthrough program.
Yeah, that's a great start.
That's a very typical beginning. You know, I would encourage people that kind of are forced to sort of be out there and work, that in the end, that stuff is a net benefit. I know right now it doesn't feel like that, but being kind of forced to get back out into life does have advantages. I know it puts, in this case, you know, right now it's a struggle. That's your basic kind of starting point. How can I make this easy? And I have a bunch of ideas, getting your blood sugar worked out and looking at people. I'm always surprised. I go over these basic ideas of, are you hydrated? How's your blood sugar? Are you sleeping? How are you getting to sleep? You know, and I see these huge mistakes people are making. It's making their situation a lot harder. Obviously, there's some cognitive stuff in there. If thinking about work makes it worse, you know that there's some triggers that you've created in there. And eventually we could pull those apart and challenge some of those one by one. But generally speaking, just remember this is a completely fixable thing. All the pieces of the puzzle already exist. We can figure them out. It's just a matter of sitting down and figuring out what works for you. So,
one of the things, just a practical thing, I don't know if it would work in this particular business, but I find if you can go in and kind of sit around for a while, check it out, learn things, you know, get close, get used to your environment, find where the bathrooms are, make sure you use the bathroom, find the cafeteria, make sure you eat something. By the time you start your job, your brain is kind of accustomed to it not being so traumatic. Everything isn't thrown at you at one time. So I don't know if that would be allowable in this job, but sometimes those little things are very helpful. When I first started flying, I started with pictures in a magazine, and I worked up to taking the motorhome to the parking lot, and then walking through the airport, and coming back home, and then just getting myself familiar so everything wasn't so overwhelming. And eventually I took my first ride, and I did use medication, but I broke it down in pieces, and I don't know if she can do that in this week, but sometimes that's really helpful. Or even just to meet somebody and feel like there's somebody you know is a little helpful. That's asking
it's all right.
A lot.
The most common one I run into is a sense of being trapped, that there's something about the social expectations of work, or it could be other things, the social expectations of going to a party, or be a variety of situations that I can't leave. I am trapped here. And realizing that that's not the case, yes, you need to generally stay at work, but, you know, if you look around, people get sick and people, you know, ask to be excused from a meeting and all the stuff in the world, you know, the sky doesn't fall. And for me, being able to just be aware that if I'm having a particularly bad day, that I'm not going to force myself to suffer. Perfectly okay to get up, take a break, come back. Even if that means going outside for a walk for a little bit, just break that sense of being imprisoned. I often talk about it as, you know, the bunch of bars of being imprisoned, and just take one of the walls down. You don't need to knock everything down and be completely free. You're still at work. But if you just know that there's one way out, and the amazing thing is just knowing that's there can be enough to where you rarely, if ever, have to use it. I play fun games with people where I make them go into a meeting at work and excuse themselves when they don't feel anxious and watch that nothing happens. You know, the world doesn't explode. And we tend, though, the more anxious we get, especially if we're susceptible to social pressure, to sit there and suffer and feel more trapped the more anxious we feel. We give ourselves less freedom when, in fact, we still have that same freedom. And so I encourage people to use it. And it's really neat. You know, once you realize you actually aren't trapped, you can you get through your day much better. Anytime those thoughts start to arise, you say, no, I can excuse myself. I can leave. It's not. That's not that big a deal, actually. That can be a huge key to unlocking that sense.
But even just explaining to people that you, whenever you start a new job, you have anxiety. That's very standard. I used that with my brother recently when he was starting a new job, and he was just so worked up and worried, and you know, he was kind of feeling sick to his stomach when he was going off to this new job, and I'd just sit down and we just have a little talk about it, and that you're going to be fine. You know that it's really hard. Everything's always hard when you first start, and that's the way people feel. You know, it's going to be hard to learn things. Everything's new, and if they can express it even in a joking way, that you know, just you know, it's always really hard for me the first week when I start a new job, and I get really anxious, so just, you know, bear with me because yeah. I'm a great worker. Getting it out on the table is incredibly helpful. And I find that once I tell people that I have an issue, then I rarely ever use it. If I don't get it out, it goes round and round in my head. What if, what if, what if, what if, what's this person going to think? What if I have to go? And when you tell them, well, I might have to get up and leave because of my anxiety, it just seems like it just lifts up a lot of that stress. And they go, oh, she just gets nervous when she first starts a job. It's no big deal. And they may even come back and say, I do too. It was so hard. I was just so nervous. I couldn't eat for a week, blah, blah, blah. And I was so stressed out. So getting it out in the open. Okay. Still no hands up, you guys. Okay. Well, since my UK person hasn't come on, let me pull up that question, so that at least they can listen to the replay. Okay, I had this person, they have not started the Break Free program. They were introduced to it by someone else and told them that it was a good thing. And, of course, you don't want to feel like you're being taken advantage of, because a lot of people with anxiety have been taken advantage of. And I said, well, just listen to our calls. Just check things out. Don't be in a rush. You can make up your mind. I'm not going to push you into anything. So, hi, Polly. I had a listen to the call, and it sounds like you all really know what you're talking about, which is nice. We're just here to help you guys, and I think she got that. I don't even know if it's a male or female. The name is, could be both. My position now is one where I need to improve my thinking a little bit, and being generally active always helps me a lot, which I'm glad she has figured this out. But I think after so many years of anxiety, maybe my body needs a bit of buffer. Josh, you're going to have to try to help interpret this for me. I tend to have general anxiety with troubling thoughts. And then once in a while, if I need to travel or go to dinner, my stomach completely shuts down and I can't eat. I feel unwell, and sometimes I will retch and throw up, very rarely. My therapist said that, this is an interesting line, my therapist said that was a strange way to have a panic attack, but it seems common to me. As someone who wants to have an international career, I need to be able to eat in restaurants and travel without my stomach shutting down. Otherwise, I will just waste away. Not to mention, it can be hard to get into relationships when you fear eating out. During my teens, I didn't really want to get better. I just hid away. But I now really want this, and I'm hoping that is what will bring me through to recovery. Do you think it is possible? And would you say Break Free is what I need? All the best. Signed, this person. There's a lot of little pieces in there that we can talk about. Where do you want to start?
There is. Well, the gastrointestinal side of this is pretty common.
I know. So when the therapist said that was a strange way, I know immediately that that therapist doesn't know what he or she is.
I don't want to throw the therapist under the bus, but yeah, I find about half my people kind of go, and I'm in that camp, and my mom's in that camp, go more towards the gastrointestinal. So, you know, we have to be aware that we're so sensitive to these chemicals, predominantly epinephrine, norepinephrine, cortisol. What those do in each person is slightly different. There's generally two groups. There's the gastrointestinal, the shaky, pukey side. That's what I put myself in. And then there's more of the can't-breathe, drowning, heart attack-y side. And I think that's what the therapist is expecting. You know, kind of a hyperventilating, racing thought, you know, that kind of can't breathe, can't get a full breath side. And, yeah, it's about 50-50 in my personal experience. And so, you know, this is a very standard story. I would want to encourage this person that this is not a particularly difficult starting place. I'm aware of how difficult this feels, but that doesn't mean that there's something particularly difficult or unique about your situation. You're unique in that you belong in a group of, I don't know, about 1 billion people on the planet who struggle. I know that sounds crazy to all of us who have hidden this from the world, but the percentages are very high. What are we at? 7.5 billion people, and let's say 15% of the population. So, yeah, pretty close to a billion people struggle in their own personal way with some form of anxiety. It's incredibly common. And it's incredibly fixable. And it's just a series of small steps. Yeah, I can relate to the feel of that. I've certainly been questioning where my life can go, because if you sit with this, it's so significant in your day-to-day, and it doesn't feel very solvable. And if you don't believe it's solvable, you doubt whether I can, you know, in my own life, I doubted whether I could have relationships, certainly, you know, well, marriage, family, kids, and that was pretty much out the door. I was willing to accept that that just wasn't going to be there. And, yeah, careers, all of our job opportunities, and in this case, he or she is mentioning that, yeah, the international travel type thing is, it seems just impossible. One of the most beautiful parts of anxiety is that the small scale is as hard as the large scale. And what I mean by that is we pick something that this person found difficult. Let's say it was getting in a car and going with a stranger for a 5-mile ride. That the game of going through that process is the same as getting on a 7-hour flight. It doesn't seem like it at first, but all of the thinking that we're going to have to face is going to show up in the 5-minute drive. Anxiety is very fast. It kicks in very hard, very quickly. And the game changes just a little bit when we go to larger events, but not much. In many ways, the 7-hour flight might be easier, actually, because you have your own bathroom and you can kind of isolate yourself, things that might actually make it easier. And it's just a blast for me to get people to do that first 5-minute thing and have a victory. And then 6 months later, they're calling me from Disneyland after a big flight across the United States. I am just floored.
So what about that guy that made his first trip to Hawaii and called you and said that he and his wife were now planning their trip to Europe on their flight home from Hawaii? That was
yeah.
So much fun when
it's
that
funny.
Happened.
Sometimes my job is to rein people in, like, hold on. You know, I love people's ambitions, but I also want people to enjoy this process. And I don't want to act like he had no anxiety in Hawaii or on the plane to Hawaii. But, yeah, people, we can do whatever we want to do, and we can go as far as we want to go with this. I have no doubt that whatever goals I wanted to do, I can do. It's just a question of, am I willing to do the work? Is it worth it? Is it something that I would do on my own? And when somebody has this passion of saying, this is my calling, you know, I want to fly internationally as part of my work, that's what
I'm really proud of this person that has this goal. It's incredible.
Yeah.
She has,
you know,
he or she hasn't been tamped down so far because she's saying, he or she.
Pick one.
That I just hid away, but now they really want us. And she's, I'm going to say, what's Tristan? Is that a male or female?
Tristan?
Yeah.
T-R-I-S-T, right?
Tristan. There's Tristan and Azoli or whatever that famous
book. When I've read Tristan in literature, it's been a guy. But
So I don't know though. But it sounds like I think I've heard a girl. So I don't know.
So that being said, yeah, if somebody has a passion like that, I am just incredibly encouraged. That's all I need. I need an open mind as far as what we're going to do, how we're going to tackle this, and then that courage and passion to get to a goal. If that's there, let's do it. If people are just like, let's just do something because it's hard, I just want to challenge myself. I sometimes say, well, would you do that, you know, whether you had anxiety or not? If the answer is no, I would say, well, let's maybe pick a different goal because this is work. You know, if someone never wanted to run a marathon but just decided to because it's hard, I might say, you know, it's not, you don't have to. We can run a smaller race. There's lots of ways to do what you think you get out of a marathon. But I have people that go overboard and say, you know, by golly, I'm going to do the hardest thing imaginable. That's how I know I've beat this thing. It's like, okay, let's do it. And usually when people bite off more than they think they can chew, they actually do okay. I'm always surprised. People have this expectation that if, you know, I woke up in Italy tomorrow, my life would be miserable. And in fact, it can be just the opposite, that all those little associations you make with the way the world sounds and smells and everything's brand new. Everything's different in Italy, let's say. And I've talked to people specifically in Italy. They were just shocked when they woke up the next day. In Italy, the anxiety was gone. And this is something that's a lifelong dream and something they questioned whether they could ever do and had all these negative assumptions. So I try to teach people to be open-minded that their anxiety might actually diminish radically when they do these big life challenges. Now, it's not to say getting to that point, it's not hard, but getting over that hump and getting to the other side, it might be pleasantly surprising when you get to that other side. And there's this almost metaphysical element that I throw in. I usually have really cool experiences when I kind of push outside of my comfort zone and I tend to say the universe rewards those who are willing to get outside of those comfort zones. And I've had a million really neat experiences that just seemed like gifts. I can't describe it another way. Just these random interactions with people or finding in amazing hidden places. I just, almost every time I push myself, I find stuff. And I don't know whether you're just open to it when you're having these experiences. You just look around with different eyes or what. But many of the greatest things in my life have come on the other side of anxiety.
Yeah. We are at 12:59, so if anybody has a question, quick. Back to the person, yes, I think the Break Free program will be the base for kicking off for his or her great challenge. I found for myself that once my body was calmed down physically, or is that physiologically, that everything became easier. All the practicing became easier. So it's not going to be the entire answer, but it just gives you such a nice space to get to feel what it feels like to live like a normal person, and then you can get out there, and we have such gifts, all of us with genetic anxiety, that probably this person will have a fantastic career.
Yeah,
so it's 1 p.m. Josh, did you want to add something before we go?
No, I'm good. This has been fun. You got to hear some of my beliefs about the value of pushing through.
And there's never any secrets here. You guys are going to know us inside and out.
In the middle of my struggle, I would have never guessed that I would look back on my anxiety with any kind of positive light. And it's odd for me to even mention that, but I look back on it now and see wonderful change, wonderful growth. And,
oh, I know. I wish I could have gotten better faster, but for me, yes, it is a blessing. We do have somebody that wants to say something before we get off the line.
All right.
So are you going to do the unmuting?
I will do the unmuting. So it says, Sonia.
Yes. Hi, Josh. How are you?
Hi, Sonia. Very good.
I was trying to figure out if it was time four, start two, start four.
Start two. We didn't mention it a lot like we normally do.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. We got so involved with this.
That's okay. I tried different numbers and keyboards. I found it. I have a question, and I know we spoke a couple of weeks ago when my anxiety started about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I used to love to drive. Me and my husband, my family would drive everywhere. But ever since I got my anxiety, I don't like to drive. I go to work. I do my errands, but I just don't like it. Would I ever get to the point where I enjoy my driving again?
Yeah, it's a weird tipping point. There's this experience in recovery from anxiety where it's really typical for where you're at, where you just say, I'm just never going to like driving again. Driving's too hard. And don't think of it like this thing that you have to, like, get over completely. So let's say right now your anxiety, if you go on a drive, is like an 8 or a 7. I don't know. Does that seem reasonable? Like, it's up there, but not like you need to immediately go to the emergency room, but it's way too high to be comfortable. You don't have to get that. You don't have to get that back to a 0 to get to where you actually enjoy the drive. For me, driving, especially with unfamiliar people, is a really big issue. And we have to remember that anxiety is just energy. It's kind of a staticky, nasty version of excitement taken too far. And I know that you certainly don't view it that way right now when it's up at those levels, 7 or 8. I mean, it becomes toxic. It becomes unpleasant. But, you know, one point at a time, we find little tricks, whether that's our own attitude, whether that's exercise, the breakthrough program. It can be medication. There's many different things that can kind of get that 8 to a 6 to a 4. And then there's this tipping point, and it doesn't have to get to a 0. But we flip over into, I'm forgetting about it. And it's funny, the more we've been struggling, actually, it doesn't have to get that low for it to not get our attention anymore. We're kind of desensitizing to it. It's odd to think about, but the more we experience it, you know, a drive at a 4 or a drive at a 3 might be no problem. Whereas 5 years ago, a 3 or 4 would be really kind of like, why is this? This is really weird. This is unnerving. And once we get to that tipping point where we're outside of ourselves, the experience is, instead of being pulled into ourselves, where we're living kind of in our mind, in our suffering, if we can just get to that tipping point where now we can look at the beauty of the world, the experience, the people we're with, engage in conversation, notice things, then we've tipped, and now we're back. Now driving is fun. And now we're actually doing that positive de-imprinting. We're breaking those old connections. You don't need to drive around at a 0 to de-imprint. You just need to be just below that tipping point where you're now outside of yourself. Can you kind of relate to that experience, being sort of outside of yourself?
I can. I can't enjoy it like I used to with my husband, especially when my husband's driving. I can't even focus on the radio or my kids. I'm like so tense.
Yeah. Yep. I see that's completely normal for where you're at. And the mistake people make is they assume that there's some silver bullet out there that's going to immediately make driving go, whether it's a cognitive strategy, a drug, one particular trick from meditation, something. Everyone's looking for the silver bullet. And I take a very different approach. I just say, okay, does this help? By 1 point, half a point, 2 points, let's just chisel this down and let's be looking for that tipping point and just be open about reaching that tipping point. And I don't mind, again, if medication comes up temporarily to kind of just get us to where we're experiencing driving and just being on the other side of that tipping point. There's a lot of different tricks that can do it. I love the breakthrough program for getting people kind of like the reserves built up. They sleep better. They just feel like they can handle the bumps a little bit better with that practice. But, yeah, you know, it's about a tipping point, and it's just finding a collection of changes that take that to a level. And I don't know what it'll be for you, where you're just able to all of a sudden pay attention to your kids, listen to the radio, be outside yourself. The tipping point is not as far away from where you're at as how it feels right now. Does that make sense?
It does. And I've come a long way. A couple of years ago, it was really bad. But my therapist told me, you need to go to work every day. Do not stop doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I made myself do it. I made myself do it. And even today, I'm like, nope, I'm going to go to work. I have to go to the supermarket, pick up my kids. I'm not going to let this win.
Right.
You know, and I talk to myself a lot. I'm like, nope, I'm going to win. I'm a warrior. I'm going to, you know, make it happen. But I remember when I was taking my, I was on Lexapro, I was a lot better. But
okay.
I stopped taking it. I only took it for about 12 months because I want to do it on my own. I want to, you know, conquer this on my own. Okay. But it's gotten a lot better. But I can't wait to get to the point where I'm not even going to realize, oh, wait a minute, I'm driving and I'm actually enjoying it. I can't wait to get to that point. And that's something I look forward to.
That's exactly what it feels like. You actually kind of don't notice when 10 miles have gone by and you've been just enjoying. You're outside yourself. It's so hard to explain to people how difficult 10 minutes can be just inside yourself suffering. Like, oh, it's just a drive. You know, it's only 10 minutes. How hard could that be? And it's like, well, very, actually. It can feel like a lot longer than 10 minutes. But, yeah, you're right. For me, I had generalized anxiety where it wasn't really events. It was just I would feel it. But I would catch myself, hey, for the last few hours, I've felt well. And getting to those tipping points wasn't about one silver bullet. You know, in your case, Lexapro might be a piece of the puzzle. I could describe to you what it does, and we can look at how it was affecting you. If it was working for you, you know, I'm okay with it. Until people are really kind of exactly doing what they want to do, I'm okay with using a medicine if it works for you. In my practice, people who do well on Lexapro there's not too many. But if you're one of them, great. That actually kind of informs me about other tricks that might work for you, knowing that one does as well, what that drug is doing and why that's working. So, you know, you don't have to make this unnecessarily difficult on yourself if you know something like that works. It's just about picking up probably 3 or 4 more tools that gets you well below that tipping point, and you can then really take that courage that you're describing of just, I'm not going to let this beat me. I'm going to keep going to work, keep going to the store. Then all of a sudden now that becomes really productive. You're kind of describing kind of what my mom was describing earlier. If I just keep going to school, but then, you know, the moment I have a break, I get setback. And again, it's all about these tipping points, just finding enough tools where now we don't have that same experience. We don't have those setbacks. Or if we have them, we know how to get back on our feet and enjoy our life again much, much faster. So you've got all the right attitude and all that. You just need a few pieces to the puzzle, and I don't know what it is for you right now, but, you know, it's out there.
I know.
They're all findable.
Will you consider that like being like a phobia or just my anxiety?
You can certainly call it a phobia. You know, it's kind of induced by underlying anxiety. You know, if you think about it, if you didn't have this physical response to anxiety, you know, driving would have never been a problem for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I don't like using the word phobia. If I just could inject that chemistry into a, quote, regular person and make them experience that every time they drove or every time they did anything, I could make them afraid of lakes or trees or anything I'd like. Is that a phobia? Yeah, kind of. But it's just that's where the chemistry arose. And, yeah. So, is it, yeah. I have something of a phobia. It's kind of an obscure one, and it feels quite different than how my anxiety chemistry has impacted the way I am able to do my life. So, I don't like calling it a phobia. It's a thing that you've imprinted. Let's say that it's a thing that's been imprinted through repetitive chemistry. To me, that's different than a phobia, although some psychologists would call it a phobia.
Okay.
You're going to hear a lot. I'm really moving away from any kind of mental illness labels on people. I think as time goes by, more and more things, we've found a key for anxiety. I think we're going to find keys for schizophrenia, bipolar, all kinds of things, phobias, like you said. I think eventually we will find them, and you're not mentally ill. I mean, it's just that you just have to find the answers to these things. It's just like having an appendicitis attack, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, I always talk about it like diabetes, that, you know, of course, before we knew anything about diabetes, it was this horrible disorder that would kill people. Now that we know what it is, and, you know, back then we would have made up things about God persecuting you or, you know, a curse or some, it would come up with all kinds of crazy theories. But then they figured out, oh, you don't produce insulin. And now you inject it. And I'm hoping to see anxiety go through a similar transition. Like, oh, you have this genetics. I believe there's a number of sort of species within anxiety. There's little subgroups of us. And yeah, I see a future where you go, oh, you have these, you know, responses. Okay. You know, we can treat it this way, this way, this way. You know, we can maybe even change the genes. I don't know what future technologies could do, but it's calling it a mental disorder, I've never been a fan of. It's my body that produces the chemistry. And yes, it affects my thinking. I was talking to my mom. Occasionally, people have gastrointestinal issues where they produce alcohol, where food naturally rots in their system. Is that and the alcohol makes them drunk and they behave silly. Is that a mental disorder? No, that's a physical disorder. The alcohol is being produced. In my case, I have a body that's really sensitive to picking up on those stress hormones. Is that a mental disorder? Because those stress hormones, when they work, they make my mind sort of behave differently. No, I just, yes, it affects my brain, but so does just about every disease. So I just don't tend to find value in viewing it as psychological. But then you start getting into therapy, right, where it's all therapy. You can work all of this out with therapy. And that might be true for some people. Certainly wasn't true for me, and I don't think it's true for the majority, actually, people out there.
No, it's not.
Okay, guys.
Well, thanks for the question.
I
yes.
have to get going, and I know that everybody else probably wants to move on with their exciting day, whatever's going to happen out there. So we will be together again on the third Tuesday of this month, and I'm looking forward to any new questions, and invite your friends, family, anybody else on the call. And maybe one of these days we'll have everybody asking questions, so it'll be more fun.
There you go. So third Thursday at 5 o'clock Pacific.
Right.
There you go.
That's it. And so
that's
we'll see you guys.
My own reminder.
And just keep sending in the questions. We'll just keep doing it this way until we get all our brave souls out there that are ready to jump. Pretty soon, you know, when you get out of this anxiety, sometimes we start talking too much. We're just so excited about life. Okay, guys, talk to you soon, and have a wonderful weekend. If we can help you in any way, let us know.
All right. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.